You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
7:06 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning on the Civic Media Network. You are listening to Civic Media Mornings. If you're in Wausau, listening on WXCO, or in Wisconsin Rapids on WFHR, or even in Richland Center, WRCE is your home station. Thank you so much for joining us. And remember, you can always listen to us anywhere you're at by downloading the Civic Media app. You can get that for free in your Apple or your Google store. And you can listen to all of the great talk programming or any of your favorite music formats as well. My name is Jamie Martinson.
Good morning. I'm Brian Noonan. We're glad you're here. Yesterday, the House actually stood up to Donald Trump. I know, it's hard to believe. Even some Republicans jumped in on this. It was a big deal because the House voted 219 to 211 to rescind President Trump's tariffs on Canada. You remember he said, well, Canada struck a trade deal with China, so we're going to kick this up to 100% tariffs. Six Republicans joined nearly all Democrats in supporting the resolution. One Democrat, Representative Jared Golden, not so golden, from Maine, voted against it.
Trump might like him a lot, though, after this.
He may do a flip.
This measure, in case you're wondering, is purely symbolic because the president will almost certainly veto this particular bill. And Congress does not have enough votes to override. However, it was good to see six Republicans say, no, this is not actually how this works, and we're not going to stand for the higher costs for our constituents. I mean, I'll take whatever little ray of hope I can get. As we know, Trump imposed the tariffs under the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, and he cited some sort of national security threat from drugs, illegal migration, and border issues. He actually put a 25% tariff on Canadian and Mexican imports and 10% on some Chinese goods. We've talked about these tariffs, right, over and over. Democrats argue that there's really no real national emergency and call the tariffs more of an impulsive economic move than any sort of strategy. They point out that less than 0.1% of fentanyl entering the U.S. last year came from Canada. Well, now that we shot down those Mylar balloons, we definitely took care of most of that.
And we got rid of all the boats that were coming from Venezuela that probably somehow got to Canada. I don't know, but that seems to be the way this administration paints the drug epidemics. Well, that's also why, you know, that's why the president now is not going to open the, or threatening to not open the Gordie Howe Bridge, which was constructed under his watch. But why quibble? But yes.
Details.
Canada has always been such a good neighbor.
Why are we
I never
trying
had beef
to,
with Canada.
Why
Did you
are
have
we
any
upsetting
beef?
Them? Why do we not like Canada all of a sudden? I don't understand what this infatuation is and why all of a sudden that we don't like Canada.
I think most of us enjoy Canada. We enjoy hockey and syrup and Tim Hortons.
It's a fun place to visit. There's lots
across,
to do.
Yes, you go to Windsor if you're in Detroit. You can get some prescription meds if you need them. You can eat good barbecue right outside the tunnel on the Canada side. There's all sorts of fun.
What is our beef with Canada? I don't understand why all of a sudden we can't like countries that are our friend. I mean, I know
because
that sounds very elementary, but
yeah, I thought we were friends. We're not.
I thought we were friends with Greenland. I have no idea.
You don't plant your lips on my posterior. You cannot be my friend if you do not do that.
How
dare they stand?
The tariff argument has been absurd from the beginning. And Republicans are defending these tariffs right now, saying that they're needed to pressure trading partners and address drug trafficking. It always comes back to the drugs.
Wow.
What is the problem?
I don't know where all these Congress people live that they're surrounded by drugs.
And I'm not
drugs are a problem.
I was going to say, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that they're not, right?
No, like, drugs are a huge problem. The problem is people want them. That's the problem.
Right.
People want them. People who are addicted need them. there's always going to be a market. The problem comes when it's these quote unquote illegal drugs, not big pharma's drugs. Because if you want to take OxyContin and you're mm-hmm. prescribed by the doctor, that's cool. But if you want to buy something off the street, not cool. And yes, I'm not dumb. I know how much crime, how much trouble illegal drugs bring. That is not the case. But it is not the be all end all boogeyman of our lives. Most of us go through our lives without having any interaction with that.
Right.
It's a problem. It's not the problem.
I'm going to need somebody to educate me as well, because I was always under the impression that most of the illegal drugs coming into this country came from various sources. Yes, I'm not naive to that, right? Never did I learn that Canada was one of the biggest drug importer. Like, I'm sure that there are things that come from Canada illegally. Not naive to these things. I just didn't realize that it was such a threat that we had to invoke 25% tariffs on a good neighbor and also potentially shut down a bridge. Like, somewhere I missed that along the way in the reading I've done. So enlighten me, please, if you can.
All right, let me enlighten you.
Okay.
You're correct. There you go. Okay. End of lesson.
Okay.
I feel like we have to keep clarifying that we're not dumb, because sometimes, people hear what they want. Oh, yeah, you feel it. Well, I feel confused, and I always feel slightly drunk because I'm like, wait a minute, you're losing your balance. Things are coming at you. Anywhere there's a giant border, you're going to get some things coming into your country,
right?
Whether it's the border to the north, to the south, whether it's from the water on the east and west, whatever it is, you're going to get some leakage, and that happens, and that needs to be addressed.
Absolutely.
But it is not the biggest problem coming out of Canada. The biggest is the way they pronounce the word about. That is if we want to stop anything,
A boot. They say a boot?
A boot.
A boot.
Yes.
You're kidding.
A boot. That's
Have you ever seen South Park?
I've never heard of that. Not much, no.
Oh, boy.
Boy Aquarium. That and the Canadian tuxedo. Let's be honest. It's only a good look for certain people. It's only a good look for certain people.
Who are those people?
How many people, Jamie?
Well, I didn't say a lot of people. I said some people. I've qualified it. I'm qualifying things like this administration does. 2 weeks. 2 weeks, we'll find out.
Lynn from Golden Valley brings up one of the funniest things I've heard. Don't forget, Trump warned that China would ban hockey in Canada. Yes. If Canada enters into a trade deal with China, which they have, China is going, according to the president, China is going to take over Canada and ban hockey. And somebody went, you know what they like up there,
sir?
They like hockey. Well, we'll tell them that they're banning it.
That's
what we're going to do.
You notice he didn't ban anything like the maple syrups or anything, right?
Because he wants to slather his Eggos in maple syrup.
Right, exactly.
He's not worried about that. He can't ice skate.
I think that brings up a bigger point, though, when you mentioned that Canada has entered into a trade agreement with China. A lot of these countries who have been faithful trade partners to the United States have had to cut ranks and basically come up with their own trade agreements because they no longer can count on the United States to be a partner, a good partner. If you want to use the word friend again, absolutely use it. But we are not a counted on country anymore for the things that other countries need us to uphold and do. And that's the unfortunate part.
Have we figured out yet that we're the ones paying for the tariffs? Figured that out?
No, because that's the one thing that you need to understand about this. No matter what this administration says, tariffs are not a foreign penalty. They're taxes that U.S. importers have to pay, which means that those costs almost always get passed on to us as consumers, American shoppers. And research shows that nearly 96% of the tariff burden hits U.S. businesses and consumers, which is why if you're a small business right now, things are probably getting a little tougher. Why, when you go to the store and you notice that some things are a little bit more expensive, because they actually are. I don't know where this $1.50 gas is. I still haven't figured it out.
Boy, my gas near me has gone up almost a buck in the last week.
Right. It's, yeah. Well, now Venezuela is going to come into play, right? Like, these are all things that are going to have ramifications.
We stole all their oil.
We
should have plenty of oil.
We should. The vote that took place yesterday in the House regarding these tariffs is it's coming ahead of the midterms, let's be honest, because lawmakers, especially the six Republicans who crossed party lines, are facing pressure from voters on economic issues in their home states, including affordability, which all comes right back to these trade impacts. Now, obviously, the president loves to voice his opinion on social media. And so he went over to Truth Social last night after this particular vote and said, quote, "Any Republican in the House or the Senate that votes against tariffs," all capital, by the way, because it's always more important when you can capitalize things, "will seriously suffer the consequences come election time, and that includes primaries." So did the president just threaten to run other candidates against his own party? Is that what I'm understanding from this? Yeah.
Once again, I feel I have to enlighten you by saying, yeah, you're absolutely right. That's
okay,
exactly
good.
What he did.
Right.
That's what he does. That's been the whole thing since he got in office. I will primary somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, go ahead. We've seen how the candidates you backed do in elections. So, all right, go ahead.
Right.
And go ahead.
He went on, because I do have to read a little bit more of this, because tariffs, again, all in capitals, have given us great national security because the mere mention of the word has countries agreeing to our strongest wishes. Tariffs, again, all capitalized, have given us economic and national security, and no Republican should be responsible for destroying this privilege. Mr. President, we're all paying the price for these tariffs every time
Not
we
him.
Try to purchase something. He's made $4 billion since coming into office this time around. So no, absolutely. Now, the other thing to keep in mind here is that the Supreme Court is currently reviewing whether Trump exceeded his authority by using an emergency declaration to impose tariffs. Those hearings took place last year, back in 2025. Yep. The justices actually are questioning the legality of applying decades-old emergency powers to nearly every trading partner. And if you had a chance to listen to any of that a few months ago, even the most staunch conservatives, including John Roberts, Clarence Thomas, were a little skeptical of the government's arguments as to why these tariffs had to be imposed. However, they still have not ruled on it. So we'll see if they kick the can or actually make some sort of decision. But tariffs. It's like the new word, right? Like, that's our big new word, and we just throw it around willy-nilly, and people don't actually understand how it all works or how it's actually affecting them right now.
No, and then if you say, hey, prices are going up, affordability is not a thing. Don't stop. That's a Democratic-invented word. Nobody ever said affordability. You all have Trump derangement syndrome. Everybody's upset about everything. This is one of those things where we have it's another step toward isolationism,
mm-hmm.
which we've talked about before, and it's obvious. And yes, you bringing back something that you mentioned earlier, you know, the president's yelling about Canada having a trade deal with China. Well, where do you expect people to go?
Right.
If you're not willing to negotiate and trade with them in good faith, if you want to penalize them
mm-hmm.
for whatever perceived wrong you've done, and then he's mad because they won't carry our products up there, I wouldn't either.
No.
Sometimes you have to think of it in your common sense terms.
Democratically run states are entering into their own agreements. It is 7:19 right now. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
7:22 right now on Civic Media Mornings. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Good morning. If you want to get involved in the program, we'd love to hear from you. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Mark sent a quick text. If SCOTUS members who claim to be conservative actually were, they would look at the Constitution and see that Congress is supposed to set tariffs and Trump's are not constitutional.
Fact.
Yes, that is true. That is 100% true, Mark. Thank you. Yes, they don't do this. I have never lived in a mobile home park or a modular home, as some people call them. But it is a big it's a big world and a big market. And yesterday, Democratic lawmakers in Wisconsin are proposing legislation that would limit rent increases in manufactured home communities, or as we used to call them, mobile home parks. Used to call them trailer parks.
Mm-hmm.
You know what we're talking about, the prefabbed homes, which have really, man, you talk about evolution from the old days of Jim Rockford's trailer on a beach to what they are now. It's like, well, these are pretty good.
Not bad, not bad.
Did you ever live in a trailer park?
I have not ever lived in a trailer park. Now, we have done, when we've gone to various parts of the country and done Airbnbs, we've stayed in them because they were near beaches and things like that and warm climates. Yes. And they were lovely.
Trailer, when we lived in Los Angeles, there was a trailer park on the cliff in Malibu overlooking the ocean.
Oh, very
and
nice.
And I thought to myself, now that's a trailer park I could live in.
Right.
That seems like a trailer park. And of course, I'm sure to live in a mobile home.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, if I lived in that mobile home, it was probably at least $400,000 to $500,000.
Right. Well,
for the property.
Yes.
$6 for the house. All of it for the lot.
That makes sense. And really, this particular bill being brought by the Democrats here in the state, they're responding to concerns about rising costs and growing influence from out-of-state corporate owners, because these parks or these areas are becoming systematically overrun by companies coming in and then jacking up the rental price, right? And so this bill has been proposed by two Democrats, Jeff Smith and Jody Emerson, and it would cap annual rent hikes at 2% or 4% based on the Federal Consumer Price Index data. It would require annual state inspections of these communities, and it would also give residents the chance to purchase their communities through cooperatives with a tax incentive for sales to resident-owned or nonprofit groups. And, you know, for a lot of people right now in this housing crisis that we're in with these astronomically priced homes and even property taxes, manufactured homes are providing an affordable path to home ownership, and that is true throughout many portions of this state. Residents often face, though, unpredictable rent hikes and also poor management, because private equity firms come into these communities, they buy them up, and then last year, for instance, in Racine County, there was a community there that saw an 18% rent increase after being sold to an Illinois-based company. So now we're talking about an option for people who are looking for a better path or a different path to home ownership and then being completely exploited by large companies. And so that is what the Democrats right now are trying to get control of in this particular state.
Well, they need to also look at not only the companies that are buying up these mobile home parks, but these companies that are amassing all this real estate.
Mm-hmm.
And they come in and they buy all these homes that are for sale, and then they decide to rent them, but they rent them at such astronomical rates that you can't, you know, if you had that kind of money for rent, you could pay a mortgage, but the mortgage companies don't look at it that way. They don't look at somebody who's been paying a few thousand dollars for rent every month and say, oh, well, then they could pay half of that in a mortgage.
Right.
They just don't have the big chunk up front to put down. The system is not consumer friendly.
No.
And yes, it's all about the money. I understand that. But it's also, this is why I'm as crazy as I am, because I try to apply logic to things.
Oh,
and it
that
doesn't
will just
make
break
sense.
Your brain.
It does, because there's no reason to look at something and go, all right, they might not have 50 grand to put down,
right,
or 100 grand to put down, but the track record of what they've been paying in rent over the last 15 years more than would cover a mortgage. So why can't we work with people that way? Why do we have to let these companies buy up all these mobile home parks and all these other homes and then just create more of a shortage because you've got the inventory. You've cornered it.
Well, and you see that with apartments living too, right? You get these major equity firms that come in and they buy up or they build these complexes, and they're doing the same thing. Then they're jacking up the rent, and it makes it essentially unaffordable for most people. Now, lawmakers say that this particular bill for manufactured homes is about protecting affordable housing, giving residents some stability. It has no Republican support, though, right now. So it is unlikely to advance.
Well, why would Republicans want people to have affordability?
Right. I mean, that's crazy. Why? Well, we haven't seen any support for that yet. And it's unlikely that this bill will advance in this legislative session. Sponsors of it, though, hope the proposal sparks some momentum for some future action. I mean, if the Republicans won't even support or discuss a bill at protecting residents of their own state, essentially their constituents, it signals that they're okay with us paying higher rents, higher property taxes, and really just leaving us vulnerable while doing very little to help the family, to help families take care of themselves. And Wisconsin still doesn't pay a true living wage either. So for a lot of people, we don't have a minimum wage that's competitive. And so for a lot of people, this is an option. This is their only option to home ownership for their family. And Republicans won't even have a serious discussion about how they can help make ends meet for a lot of these families. And at that point, that's just unserious. It's literally unserious and not doing your job.
Right. And then we wonder why there's always the discussion of the cycle of poverty. Mm-hmm. Well, you're contributing to it right now. So
is that the goal, though?
Maybe cut that out. It shouldn't be the goal. Grocery prices very high. There's a model that is being used somewhere that might surprise you that could be a public model.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. Commissaries? Who thought? 729 right now on the Civic Media Network. It's 7:35 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Network. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. And we will be talking in just a minute to our guest. There's a little technical difficulty. Not on her end. I blame the Boyquarium. Because Frank and I could hear our guest perfectly. And listen, we can have a conversation. I want to include Jamie, but,
I'm good with just listening because this is an important one. This is an important one.
Well, here's the thing. We all know if you've been going to the grocery store, and I don't know about you in your house, Jamie, but in our house, I handle 90% of the grocery shopping. So every week I'm going on the app of the store that we go to the most. Mm-hmm. I'm clipping the deals. I'm looking at all the flyers. I'm trying to figure it out because prices are high for everybody.
Right.
And there's ways that you can keep prices low.
Yes.
You know, some people have tried to go to co-ops. Other people do other things. But this is one place the government has figured it out. But they're not sharing that idea with everybody until now. And that's the commissaries. You always heard about it when you would hear when you would talk to somebody in the military or you'd watch a movie or something, they would go to the commissary.
Yes.
I only heard of commissaries in two places, the military and prison, both run by governments. Now, you don't want to go to the prison commissary because all you're getting is smokes, ramen, and maybe an Uncrustable.
Absolutely.
But the military commissaries, those are full-service grocery stores.
They are.
Oh, and our guest
is
here.
We got it. Good job, Boyquarium.
Yes.
So, I try my best.
Thank you.
There was a new election in New York for mayor, and Mayor Mondami said that he was going to combat rising grocery prices by setting up city-run grocery stores in the five boroughs of New York. Well, the Defense Department, like we said, the military's been doing this for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Claire Kellaway is a food program manager at the Open Markets Institute, and she wrote a big story on this in Washington Monthly, and she joins us now. Claire, thanks for being here. I was just starting to talk a little bit about commissaries. Can you explain the concept of a commissary to someone who's only heard about it from a movie or a TV show?
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you for having me. In simple terms, a military commissary looks a lot like a normal grocery store. You'll walk in, you'll see familiar brands, a lot of variety, but you can only get to them on a military base in most cases. And you need a military ID to get in. The idea is they were started a long time ago in the 1800s as a way to provide food to military members. Most of them are in the United States, but there are also a lot on bases around the world. And that's particularly a way for military families to access, you know, peanut butter, name brand American products that might be harder to find when they're stationed overseas.
And commissaries get steep discounts, Claire, thanks to volume purchasing and also some of the supplier agreements. But could a city or some sort of public co-op achieve those types of deals that commissaries are getting right now?
Yeah, that's the case I'm trying to make in my story, that when you have the, you know, buyer power of the government behind you, that we could see grocery stores get access to better wholesale prices. Right now, there's an issue in the grocery industry where it doesn't necessarily always matter if you reach the highest economies of scale. Economies of scale don't always determine the prices that grocery stores receive. It actually has a lot more to do with buyer power. That's why we see, you know, chains like Walmart getting some of the best prices that are, they can sell goods at retail markup better than, you know, an independent co-op can purchase those same products for at wholesale. And so if you have the government involved and they have this mandate to get the best price, then that can kind of level the playing field, so to speak. And yeah, you could have more grocery stores getting access to the best wholesale prices.
Well, it sounds on paper like a pretty good idea. Has it been tried outside of the military prior to this?
I mean, the scale of the military commissary is part of what makes it effective. There are, so economies of scale in grocery do exist. You need a certain amount to be able to fill a truck, sure, for instance. And we don't, at least in the US, have a public grocery system that's as big as the military commissary system. We've seen some cities, especially small rural towns, actually try to open a city-run grocery store because it might be the only way to keep the store open. And those trials have had some mixed results, mostly because they're so small. So, yeah,
we're
not there.
We're talking with Claire Kellaway. She is the food program manager at the Open Markets Institute. You mentioned the places like Walmart, and we also look at other chains like Dollar General. What kind of competition would these public options create for some of these bigger chains? And how would that affect our pricing and also some of our choices that we get at the store, Claire?
Yeah, I think the idea with having a civilian commissary system is that you would have at least one player in the market that, you know, is not profit driven and is offering the fairest price they can. And so, you know, we assume that a chain like a Walmart or a Dollar General, you know, famously, they offer really low prices. A big challenge in rural areas is they're really out competing the small stores and offering super low prices. But, you know, we also see in the data that when you have a true grocery monopoly, just one option, that consumers tend to pay higher prices. So it could be hard to know if, you know, consumers are actually getting the best deal. And when you have that more direct competition, then we would hope, chains would have the incentive to compete more aggressively and offer the most fair, lowest prices.
You mentioned in your story, which people can read it with the Washington Monthly, that the public option is going to come in. There's two different models. Can you explain that?
Yeah, so I'm proposing either we open, very similar to the commissary, public-run grocery stores across the country, or we could achieve, I would think, substantially similar effects if the government ran a wholesaler effectively, that you could have independent grocers would have the option of buying from them. This isn't a totally new idea. Independent grocers do have their own wholesaler, but the difference is that wholesaler doesn't have the same, you know, heft as the government to get the best wholesale prices. And so this would effectively level the playing field. So hopefully independent grocers would have similar access as to wholesale prices as something like Walmart. And, you know, I would imagine there might be some conditions that if you're, you know, buying goods from this public wholesaler, you have to, you know, have a fair duty to, you know, not price gouge or, you know, charge more than is necessary. But yeah, it could be a way to have a real fair wholesale price option for private players potentially in the market.
And when there's portions of Wisconsin that are literally food deserts, right? There's a couple towns that don't even have grocery stores. People have to drive 15, 20 minutes just to access food unless it's at a convenience store. So let's kind of focus on that for a second. How would these public options improve that type of access? What would it do for areas that are food deserts or even for very low income neighborhoods?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the hope would be if you're, you know, justifying this public involvement in the grocery industry, that it would be targeted at places where private industry isn't serving the community, right? So I think going into food deserts would be a prime example of where this could, you know, make a lot of sense. I was listening to the either current or former CEO of the commissary system, and, you know, that he was talking about one thing that is really different about the commissary system is, you know, the government tells them where they have to have locations. And he's like, yes, I run this like a business to the best of my extent. But if I was really running this like a private grocery business, I would go in and I would close 30 commissaries, and I'm not allowed to do that. And I could see, you know, the benefit of having a player in the system that can provide food where, you know, private industry just won't, I think could provide a really great public service and ensure people have access to, yeah, healthy, affordable food.
Claire Kellaway is our guest. She's the food program manager at the Open Markets Institute. You can read her story about this at WashingtonMonthly.com. So check that out. It goes into a lot of detail. Claire, the biggest worry that I have, and I'm sure a lot of people listening, is anytime the government gets involved in something, it tends to get muddled up. There's so much bureaucracy. What are the big concerns about this public option model, which, again, on the surface, seems to make perfect sense?
Yeah, I think when people hear about the idea of a public grocery store, the idea of like the Soviet Union comes
socialist.
To mind.
Yes.
I
mean,
I
think socialist.
I don't want to stand in line for bread.
Yes, no one wants to stand in line. No one wants to have limited options. I think there's that anecdote about, one of the leaders of the Soviet Union coming to the U.S. and seeing our abundant grocery stores and realizing, oh, if this gets out, I'm in a big PR problem. But yeah, I think that the commissary system really stands to show that it doesn't operate that way. It really looks and feels like a normal grocery store. So I think it's a proven system that's working. And if the idea is to, you know, build upon that and expand it, we haven't really, you know, seen the same pitfalls that we have in other public grocery systems. And I think that probably has to deal with their procurement and their, you know, local management systems. Yeah. They, you know, really bring in people from private industry to run these stores. And, you know, there's an expectation to carry a certain number of products, like maintain a certain variety.
It must be a good idea, because now the Department of Defense is looking to privatize the commissary system, which seems to go against everything it was set up to do.
Yes. There was a request for information put out. It's not quite a request for proposals, but trying to see, Walmart, Amazon, whomever, like, if you were to take over the system, what would it look like? There's been a lot of pushback. This system is really beloved by military members and veterans, and there's some pretty bipartisan support to push back against the privatization, but it's something that the current administration is on the record saying they want to do and are taking some steps to explore what that would look like. It is hard. Yeah, it's hard to imagine. I think the concern is that there is a subsidy that goes into the commissary system that it's seen as a, you know, a benefit to military families. Yes. Mm-hmm. And there's a concern that, you know, if a private industry took it over, you know, it would just be a pass through, basically, like, you know, military families would automatically get like a 20% discount and we would be subsidizing that. And yeah, it's not the same in terms of maintaining all those locations and the discount. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Claire, thank you so much for your time today. I think we're coming up on the clock here. Yep. Claire Calloway. She is the food program manager at the Open Markets Institute. Check out her article over at the Washington Monthly. Again, thank you so much for your time. It is 7:48 right now. You are listening to Civic Media Mornings. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. That's WashingtonMonthly.com to hear Claire's story, read Claire's story. Claire, thanks again. This is the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
7:52 right now. We hope you are having a great morning. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Network. I'm Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Good morning. We did get a tell. We were talking about commissaries. We had a comment on the YouTube stream from one of our listeners who was in the Navy and said she loved the commissary when she was in the Navy. That was from Alicia. So thank you, Alicia, for jumping in. You can always jump in, whether it's on YouTube or by phone / text, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Is that where we are?
Yes, Book, we're also on the Book of
too?
Faces in the morning
in the
as well.
App,
Meta.
Oh, my goodness.
What do we call it now? Meta, the Book of Faces? I don't even know.
No, I just call it the old people's social media.
Yeah.
Play with is lots of disinformation.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm going to forward you this thing that I saw that says it.
No.
No.
Stop.
Don't. That's, no. No.
My mom. We finally had to take my mom off Facebook because she was getting hacked nonstop because she was accepting friend requests from everybody that she thought she knew, and she could not understand that it was fake.
Oh.
But that's not an unusual problem.
No.
One of the things I enjoy is throughout all my travels is I love a good dive bar. I've always been a fan. I'm not a.
Best.
I was never a like club guy like a. A
too loud.
Disco or those kind
pretentious.
Of
pretentious.
I like right, and I'd go out like back in the day. You go to drink. I go to a tavern to sit and have some drinks. And there's a guy in Wisconsin, Jared Schutz, and if you don't follow him, Wisco Dive Bar Reviews is his website, and it's great because no matter where you're going to travel in Wisconsin, if you're looking for a dive bar, he's been there.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes around. Well, they just named their 2025 Dive Bar of the Year.
Ooh.
And this is what we want to know from you. Do you have a favorite dive bar? And I know some of the network towns, because I've been in a lot of them,
mm-hmm.
no slouch when it comes to dive bars.
Well, we do alcohol well here in Wisconsin.
I have two favorite dive bars in the country.
Okay.
One of them is in Appleton at Cleo's. I don't know if you've ever been to Cleo's.
Not.
It is. Now, some people may argue, is it really a dive bar? I would say yes, because it's very dark. It's a dive bar that has a unique character because it's all Christmas decorations.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, they make strong drinks in a fun
even
atmosphere.
Better.
And it's, so that's always tops my list. And I, trust me, Jamie, when I tell you this, this is not bragging. I have been in dive bars across this great land of ours and in foreign lands. So I have that. The other one is Snake and Jake's in New Orleans. It should be condemned. It is in a residential neighborhood. It is an old house between two houses. It is literally falling apart. It doesn't open until 10 o'clock at night.
That's when all the best debauchery happens.
It is terrifying in there. There's... You know, there's the bar. I always sit at the bar because they have some couches, and God only knows what happened on those couches.
No, never sit on anything with fabric in a dive bar.
No.
Especially if it's
not.
Dark. No, no.
And it is dark. They have a few. The commonality between there and Cleo's, Snake and Jake's also illuminated by strings of really cheap Christmas lights.
Of course. That's how you know you're in a good dive bar.
Yes,
is when it's dark and there's Christmas lights hanging everywhere. I also have a couple. One of my favorites is actually in Green Bay, Lenny's Tap. Wonderful place if you want to go check out a Packers game. Lots of great drinks, good camaraderie, Packers fans galore, and big screen TVs. It's always a good time. And then my other favorite dive bar is actually in Minneapolis. It's called The Nook. You can there's probably four tables in The Nook, but you can get the damn best juicy Lucy burger you have ever had to go with your drinks. See now.
Are you saying Matt's is not as good as The Nook?
The Nook. Matt's the Nook. Nook. Known for the Juicy Lucy.
The reason we bring this up is because the Fuzzy's Bar in Crivets was named the 2025 bar dive bar of the year, and its owner turned 93 this month.
Wow.
Lolly.
That's awesome.
So this was the original review that Jared did for Wisco Dive Bar Reviews. Sold.
That's awesome. Now, I have to say, over on our stream, John is commenting saying that Cleo's is not a dive bar. If there's a stoplight within sight, disqualified in the dive bar competition.
If there's a stoplight in sight?
Usually good dive bars are out in the middle, kind of nowhere,
Yeah, but it depends where you grow. There's dive bars in urban neighborhoods. There's dive bars.
Oh, for
it
sure.
It does it. All you need for a dive bar is atmosphere.
Yeah.
And camaraderie, cheap beer, and maybe a snack, like some peanuts or a jar of pickled eggs or something on the... If you see hog jowls or pork feet or
yes.
pig's feet on the bar, you know you're
pickled
in a dive
eggs.
Bar.
Pickled eggs.
Pickled eggs.
Pickled
yep.
eggs are always a good one. Or you can buy the big sticks of meat, you know, like the jerky
a
behind...
A stick of meat is good.
It's
and
always,
some really
yes.
off-brand bag of chips that's hanging
yes.
behind on some
it
hook.
It looks like it's been there since the day the bar opened.
Has anybody ever had any of those chips? No.
No.
Well, you can check out all about Fozzie's at wiscodivebars.com. Congratulations to Lolly and Fuzzy's. And that's
I
it.
I want to still
now
be slinging
I,
burgers
want,
at 92 and serving
how
up beer.
About it?
Come on
and
now.
I want three old fashions for $11.
Oh, now we're talking. It is 7:59 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. It is Civic Media Mornings. I'm Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Thanks for listening and being part of the show. We will talk to you again tomorrow morning.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.